The following presentation is brought to you by Priority One.
Good evening and welcome to tonight's Priority One Back to School Parenting Lecture entitled Preparing for a Successful School Year. We are delighted that you have joined us this evening to participate in this very important educational program. Tonight's lecture is part of the broader Priority One Community Training Initiative, designed to train and empower parents and teachers throughout the Jewish world to meet the many social, religious, and academic needs of our students. We believe of our children. We believe that such proactive training will go a long way in ensuring our children's ultimate success. Priority One is also proud to offer the community valuable tools and resources to ensure the successful development of its children. These materials can be found viewed outside on the display tables. Audio recordings and printable materials can also be downloaded from Priority One's website, www.priorityone.org. Since I began in my role as Priority One's Midwest Regional Director 3 years ago, we have focused the majority of our attention on training Chicago teachers to work effectively with today's students. Working closely with the Associated Talmud Torahs, we have offered local Rabbeim and teachers many important practical sessions on a wide range of educational topics. To date, 65 teachers from various local yeshivas and day schools have participated. Many have attended our sessions for all 3 years that they have been offered. The feedback that we've received from those in attendance has been very positive, and we hope to continue such programming in the future. This past April, nearly 200 Chicago parents participated in our first Parenting Expo, which featured a variety of interactive workshops and a keynote address by Rabbi Shaya Cohn, Dean of Priority One. The feedback that we received from the program was exceptional. Tonight's program is our second such offering to parents and underscores our commitment to bring meaningful ideas and resources to the Chicago community. Priority One is also planning to initiate a mentoring program for children within the community right after Sukkot. In order to ensure the success of this much-needed program, we need to develop a strong cadre of volunteer mentors, individuals who can devote 1 week, 1 hour weekly to help provide social, emotional, academic, and or religious support to a child in need. Anyone who is interested in participating in this important mitzvah should please contact me at, I'll give you the number, 773-304-2505 or via email at nhoff@priorityone.org. I do have business cards on the table outside. Feel free to take one. I can be contacted that way. We are grateful to tonight's sponsors, Mr. and Mrs. Yosef Davis, who have lent their support and encouragement for this project. The Davises, who are well known throughout the world for their generosity and commitment to the strengthening of Torah and Yiddishkeit, are sponsoring tonight's program in honor of their children, who work tirelessly to enhance the quality of chinuch here in Chicago. It is with great pleasure that I now introduce tonight's speaker, Rabbi Binyamin Ginsberg, Dean of Torah Academy in Minneapolis. Rabbi Ginsberg is a creative, caring, and experienced educator, a solutions-oriented principal who is regarded regularly consulted by mechanchim throughout America. He writes a weekly column in the Ated Ne'eman and is a contributor to the Ated's Chinuch Roundtable. Rabbi Ginsberg has been the Dean of Torah Academy in Minneapolis since 1999. Under his leadership, Torah Academy was named the Hirsch Potok Memorial 2004 School of the Year by Torah Masorah. Rabbi Ginsberg, who was a musmach of Tal's Yeshiva in Cleveland, received his master's degree in education from the University of Minnesota. And in 2000, he was a senior leadership fellow at the Center for Advanced Professional Educators in Yerushalayim. In 2004, he attended the Summer Institute at the Principal Center of Harvard University. He most recently graduated from Columbia University's Institute for Day School Management. He's on the faculty of Torah Masorah's Teacher Training Institute in New York. We feel very fortunate to have Rabbi Ginsberg address us this evening on the topic of preparing for a successful school year. I am sure that we will all leave this evening inspired and informed, equipped with new ideas and strategies to help ensure a successful year for our children. Without further ado, Rabbi Ginsberg.
Good evening. Thank you, Rabbi Hef, not only for such a beautiful introduction reminding me of who I am, but also for all your efforts in putting together this evening. People don't know what it takes until you actually put one together. So I can tell you that many, many hours went into the planning, and hopefully you will all find it necessary to say a thank you to Rabbi Haff at the end of the evening. Thank you also to my old Chaver of Yosef Davis and his entire family for sponsoring this evening, and it's really a pleasure to be together. Let me tell you briefly what we're going to do in the next hour and a half. I hope that you will all walk away with something that you can put into place as soon as your children go to school, immediately. Number two, I'd like the evening to be enjoyable. And if it's going to be enjoyable for me, it will be enjoyable for you. It was remarkable. I'm reminded of a story that happened last summer, not this past summer. I was teaching a course for Torah Mesorah in New York, and we were having a great time. 30-something Rabbeim and Moros were in the room for a period of a week, and it was the fourth day of the course, and I called Rabbi David Naiwitz, the head of Torah Mesorah, and I said, you have to come down and see what's going on. It's actually a few blocks away from your office. This is your program. Come and take a look. Rabbi Naiwitz walks in the next day to visit the class, and he sits there for an hour. And it was really a very exciting class, if I may say. After all, my boss was observing. And all day long, I'm waiting for Rabbi Naiwitz to call me up and give me the feedback, how he liked what he saw and everything. And finally, at night, the phone rings, and Rabbi Naiwitz calls me up, and he says, Rabbi Naiwitz, I want to tell you, it was very, very obvious that you were enjoying yourself this afternoon when I sat in your class. And I'm waiting. Okay. Tell me, what else did you see? You were sitting there for an hour. Did you see me interacting with the Rabban? Did you see anything other than me enjoying myself? And he had nothing else to say, and he hangs up. I said, thank you. And I was rather upset until 2 minutes later the phone rings. And it's Rabbi David Bernstein, another member of Torah Mesorah. And he says, Rabbi Yamin, you're scheduled to speak to our Rabbeim before the new school year begins, a few days before school. In New York, they have a workshop for all Rabbeim to kick off the new year. I need a topic. What are you going to speak about? So I said, oh, I have a perfect topic. It's called enjoying your teaching. And he says, that's fabulous. I'm putting it down. And then I had to prepare for that topic, enjoying your teaching. And what I realized, Rabbi Naiwitz was extremely perceptive in what he was saying. He was telling me that you don't need any other critique. The fact is that you were enjoying the class. It was obvious that who else was going to enjoy it? Your students, everybody who was sitting there. And that's the focus that I think we have to look at as we begin a school year. We want our children to enjoy the classroom. Rabbi Haff mentioned that I write a weekly column for the Ated. And it's very, very interesting how that took its form. I write a newsletter for my parents on a weekly basis, and it's called Kolenu. And every week, I have what's called the Dean's Message. I have to come up with something to say. So approximately 7-8 years ago, I wrote an article called School, A Happy Place for All. And I basically said that school should be a happy place where everybody wants to come to school. I mean, could you imagine if school would be a happy place, what result we can expect from our children? And the editor of the Ted, Rabbi Lifshitz, for some reason came upon that article. And he said, do you mind if I print it? And that was the beginning of a very interesting career, if I could say. It's a whole life of its own. It's amazing, once you write for a newspaper, you're suddenly responsible for everything that anybody writes. And in the Ated, if you know, there's a section called the Readers Write, you know, where people write in letters. So I'm responsible for every letter that anybody ever wrote to the Ated, because I'm writing for the Ated. The best one was, I don't know if you remember, a few years ago, somebody wrote a letter criticizing the Ated, why they were advertising, they ran an advertisement for animal cookies. After all, those animal cookies have non-kosher animals. So how can you support? So somebody came over to me and said, isn't it nonsensical, these type of letters that people write in? It reminded me, many, many years ago, there was a magazine called The Jewish Woman's Outlook. I don't know if you remember it. It's not in existence anymore. So somebody wrote a letter to the editor once complaining, how was it that on one side of a page you can have an advertisement promoting Falls Chicken, name brand of a chicken, and facing directly the opposite, you were advertising Ha'olam cheese. Well, aren't you concerned about Basa V'Chalav? True story. The editor, Henny Walton, a brilliant woman, she responds and she goes, I want you to rest comfortably knowing that we waited 6 hours in between printings. So my disclaimer is I'm not responsible for anything that anybody writes in the Atzhed, even what I write. Because if you don't like something I write, I can always say that one of the editors probably did some kind of changing to it. Four different people go through an article before it gets printed. An amazing, amazing process. But tonight we're talking about school, we're not talking about newspapers. I want to make one disclaimer. I may say some things today that are going to be radical, different, and things that may not be in practice here in Chicago. I hope they are, and if you would like them to get instituted, I would suggest that you do it very delicately. The worst thing that you can do is go over to a principal and say, why don't you do this and this? Ginsburg spoke about it and it makes sense. Okay, things don't work well that way. And I'm just sharing you my ideas, my experiences, what has worked for me. And primarily, it is for parents. It's not for what the schools should be doing. I spent plenty of time speaking to the principals of schools. Tonight is the night to talk to the parents of schools. So let's begin. We're going to try to have some fun. And I'll tell you the process I use before I speak. Anytime I'm ready to say something, I make a list of the points I would like to make. And in order to help me stay focused, this is when I taught a class too, is I take all the points I want to use and I develop an acronym with those points. I love acronyms. Everybody will tell you that I'm a big, big fan of acronyms. I remember last year, one of our teachers came over to me and said, I'm ready to introduce the acronyms for Chodesh Elul tomorrow. You know, Anil Dol Dividol Dili and the others that we have. Do you have an anticipatory set? It's fancy language for a hook that I can use to get the students into the concept of acronyms. So I told them, why don't you go and have each one of them come up with the name of an airline that they're going to come to class tomorrow with the name of that airline, and you're going to come up with an acronym for each airline. She said, what are you talking about? What do you mean by airline acronyms? I said, well, for example, somebody's going to come in with TWA, Olav HaShalom. You'll say, TWA is the worst airline. Okay. Or reminds me, one time I was traveling from Seattle to New York and we were changing planes in St. Louis, and that used to be the hub of TWA. And I'm walking, my oldest son, I think, was 5 years old, and we're walking along the corridor, and there are a bunch of Arabs sitting on the side. My son screams out, Tazi, I know why it's called TWA, travel with Arabs. And she said, okay, that's one, but what about the others? So I said, give me an airline. So I say, so she says, Delta. Delta is simple, don't ever leave the airport, right? And she did that and it worked beautiful. You know, Ford is fixed or repair daily. Each company has its own unique acronym. I love acronyms. Our discipline system in our school is also based on an acronym, which is called Discipline as Easy as Pie, P-I-E. And anybody who knows me knows what PIE stands for. We prevent discipline problems from happening to begin with. Many of our discipline problems that children do should be ignored. We don't have to know that, recognize that everything that a child does. And the final one is E, we have to educate children how to behave. We assume that children just know how to behave, and we knew how to behave, maybe because our parents taught us, but children have to be taught how to behave. It was amazing, this past Thursday, we did a lesson with our teachers, and it was an amazing process. For an hour, we had all of our teachers, Limudei Kodesh, Limudei Chol, develop a lesson how we would teach third graders not to interrupt the teacher while the teacher is talking. Okay, now you would say that's a worthwhile lesson. Okay, we'll take 40 minutes and we give a guarantee that if the students would be taught that lesson versus told that lesson, you know, when we would, I think we remember many times a teacher would say, how many times do I have to tell you to sit down? Okay. If I was a clever student, I would say 3 dozen sounds like a good number. My response is, if you just teach it to me one time, you'll never have to tell it to me. We can teach people how to behave. But that's the acronym for discipline. We're not talking about that tonight. We're talking about, we're going to use an acronym. An acronym we're going to use tonight is New Year. You know how to spell that? N-E-W-Y-E-A-R. It's going to be very easy for you to go home tonight. Somebody's going to say, so what did Ginsburg have to say? You're going to be able to say the 7 points quickly, easily, because you're going to remember we're looking to begin a new year in a very, very successful way. I will just say one more thing about acronyms. I remember the first time I spoke in Minneapolis was at our annual banquet. And everybody gets together, a wonderful banquet. I get up there and I say, I introduce the introduction of acronyms. I speak using acronyms. So you're not going to see me have any notes here tonight. I'm going to use an acronym of the name of the school, which is Torah Academy, T-O-R-A-H-A-C-A-D-E-M-Y. Let's begin. So there was a wise guy in the audience, and he screams out, and he says, when we refer to our school, we use T-A. Okay? So I said, you better be careful. I was contemplating going to Torah Academy of Minneapolis. So be happy that we're just keeping it to Torah Academy. So I think we're going to keep it to New Year. I think we'll be able to get the points across. And it's amazing how I don't have to change any of the points, but they always somehow fit into an acronym. Okay, let's begin with N. Okay, I think that's the first one. You may have to remind me as we go along. Okay, N is a very, very... Let me shut my cell phone so you can do yours too. Okay. N is going to be the word that we use for never. The letter that we use for the word never. Never, never embarrass a child. Seems so simple, seems so obvious, but unfortunately, it's happening too many times. I speak to hundreds of children in my school and in schools all over the country, and I always ask them questions. And one of the questions that I usually ask is, what is it about school that you don't like? And the two greatest complaints that children have about school is, number one, is that they get embarrassed. And there are two different forms of embarrassment. One is blatant embarrassment, and the other one is they don't know information, they don't know an answer when they're called on. That is more subtle embarrassment. The second complaint they have about schools is the fact that they are bored. Those are the two biggest complaints. But let's take a look at what we as parents can do to solve the embarrassment problem. It was a very interesting summer this summer in many, many ways. At one point, we had a program in New York. We were teaching. We had close to 40 rabbeim for 2 weeks, from 9 o'clock in the morning every day till 5 o'clock. An amazing commitment. They were spending 2 weeks perfecting their skills in teaching. And it came time for me to talk about discipline. So we said, discipline, the first rule is, and I'm ready to start talking, and it's 5 after 9, and in walks one of the rabbeim. And I said, excuse me, why are you late? Okay. And he says, gives me the excuse. And he turned every imaginable color. You can't imagine how embarrassed he was. And that was my introduction to something that I once did in the school that was extremely, extremely rude and cruel. But it was a sacrifice to illustrate this point of we are not permitted to embarrass a child. And what is my definition of embarrassment? I'm not worried about teachers telling children you're dumb, or now I understand why your parents don't like you. I'm not talking about those blatant things of embarrassment. I'm talking about the more subtle ones. So we had a faculty meeting. All the teachers come together for a meeting. And within 5-10 minutes after the beginning of the meeting, a teacher walks in late. And I ask her very, very politely, excuse me, why are you late? And she explains how her car broke down, and it's been a problem. I can speak up a little bit, is that better? Okay, I'm sorry. And this teacher starts going through, it's not on? Is this on now?
Yeah.
Okay. And the teacher goes through a 5-minute explanation about how her car broke down and how it's really not her fault, and she's been telling her husband for the past months that the car has to be fixed. By the time she was finished, everybody was sure she was getting divorced tomorrow. Another teacher came and, another teacher came and brought her a box of tissues to wipe her tears. It was a horrible scene. What was my question?
Why
why are you late? A few minutes later, there was another teacher who was doing a very, very common activity that happens at faculty meetings all over the world. Anybody know what that is? Women do what? Knit. Okay, the faculty meetings. And I said very politely, can you please not knit during my meeting? Okay. A few minutes later, a Rebbe was doodling. Okay. I said, I don't think it's polite for you to be doodling during my meeting. I want you to pay attention. And the fourth one was another Rebbe. I wanted to do equal, you know, men and women. Another Rebbe was drinking. I said, can you please not drink during my meeting? You should have seen what was going on in that room. I waited until the meeting was over, and I'm watching what's happening, and there are clusters, and heavy. You can feel the steam coming up. One of the Rebbeim was very brave. He comes into my office right afterwards, and he says, what happened to you today? I said, well, what? Everything is perfect. Wasn't it a great meeting? So he goes, the Olam is up in arms. They can't believe what you did. So I ignored him. The next morning, everybody came to school. There was a note in their box. There's an emergency meeting today after school in this room. Please do your best to be there. Who was there? Everyone. What were they sure was going to happen? I was going to apologize, come clean. We come to the meeting. I walk inside and I say, you know, somebody came to me yesterday and said that I embarrassed some people at the meeting yesterday. Will those people who I embarrassed please stand? So somebody gets up, he goes, Rabbi, not enough that you embarrassed them yesterday, you want to do it again? So I said, hold on a second. Let's be honest. When was the last time, okay, somebody in this room asked a student who came late, why are you late? Don't raise your hands. I don't want you to be embarrassed. But you'll probably all raise your hands that you've all done it within the last week. Okay? How many times have we told children, put away that pen. Stop doing this and that. Therefore, what do we see from this? What did we learn from this very painful experience yesterday? That any time you pay attention, you focus attention on a child who's doing something they shouldn't be doing at that time, what are you doing to that child? You are embarrassing that child. Okay, it is so clear. Try it. Talk to your children and you'll hear it. There's a very, I told you the story that happened this summer. This Rebbe walked in 9:05, was terribly embarrassed. I spent the next hour and a half talking about embarrassment. And the next day, he comes to class and he starts off and he says, you know, I was thinking all about what you said yesterday about embarrassment, and I disagree. I don't think that we are doing a bad job embarrassing. After all, we're supposed to embarrass children. And he quotes the Rambam. Rambam says that if a child is not doing what they should be doing, he uses the words lachlimai, which is basically, in short, a nice way of saying embarrassing. So I told him a story that happened several years ago. We were a group of 18 principals visiting in Eretz Yisrael, and we went to visit Rav Michal Yehuda Lefkowitz, who's a genius in chinuch. And we're sitting in the room together, and we had this unique privilege. Anybody can ask him whatever we wanted. And we were asking him the typical questions, one after the other, and we finished. So finally, one person says, Ginsburg, asking you a question. I knew exactly what he meant. I said, Megmin Fashem and Akint, are you allowed to embarrass a child? See, he looks at me with such disdain. He says, Chas v'sholem. What kind of question is that? So I said, but the Rambam says, and I'm suddenly the bucking of the Rambam, and I quote that Rambam. So he says, yeah, but Nishba Rabban, not in public. When you tell a child one-on-one that they're doing something that's not appropriate, that is also embarrassing. But it's not in public. That's the difference. We have to educate children, we have to be mechanech them, we have to make sure that they're behaving properly, but not in front of anybody else. And parents have that same obligation at home. If you have more than one child, you have to be very careful how you're educating each and every one child. You can be embarrassing one child in front of just one other sibling, and that is unacceptable. I'm not sure you heard, but if you didn't, I will tell it to you. There was a letter written this year by Rabbi Yehuda Leib Steinman that was written to a principal of a school in Eretz Yisrael, but it's appropriate to every principal and every parent. Because he spoke about parents too. He said, I'm often questioned, why are we as a klal suffering so much more these days than ever before? Whether it's economic suffering, whether it's health problems, whether it's shidduchim, he mentions all these things. And he says, to me it is very clear because of the way children are being treated. It's an amazing letter. You should see the letter. It was translated word for word. It's a very, very powerful wake-up call that we have to stop embarrassing children. So what is the N? Never. They never embarrass your children. Okay? We're going to move on. E. E is the one that is, I believe, very important, but something that a lot of people have problems with. The E stands for educate. But what I'm referring to when I say educate, I'm not so simply telling you that you have to teach your children Chumash and Navi and Gemara and Lahabdol Mass and all those wonderful subjects. I'm talking about educating them about the important facts of life. And I'm going to say something that's not popular and not comfortable. But at what age do we have to train these children in that form of education? Unfortunately, at a very, very early age today. Why is that? Because you want to make sure that any of those subjects, any of those lessons, your children learn it from who? From you. From you and you only. You don't want it coming from a classmate. You don't want it coming from a textbook. You don't want it coming from a billboard. And you can't take chances today. Unfortunately, children are being raised too early. And you can't take a chance. And the general rule of thumb is, anything that you don't want them to learn from somebody else, you make sure that you're educating them. And it takes a very, very careful calculation. I encourage you all to seek your own Das Torah about this. There's been tremendous, tremendous support from all the Gedolim I've spoken to on this issue to give children education on this very, very detailed education as early as possible. Again, one of the main goals in this is you want to make sure that when your children have questions later on, even in the year from now, that they're going to feel comfortable coming to you to discuss the questions they have. That is the ultimate goal. You want to make sure that when their classmate says, "Did you know?" they should be able to say, "That is something that we don't talk about. That's something that we talk about with our parents." And that's part of the education that you're giving them. That these are things that we talk about with Kedusha, we talk about them with great sensitivity, and we talk about them only in the confines of the home between the parent and the child. So the E is educate them on the delicate facts of life. And included in that is being training children to understand what to do when it comes to inappropriate touch. Unfortunately, there are too many stories that we know of, and more stories that unfortunately we don't know of. We will find out when our children are adults, and they are chas v'shalom going to repeat the behaviors if it's not being dealt with. We have to train our children so that they know what to do if chas v'shalom anybody is inappropriate with them. So the E is educate them about the things that we don't necessarily want to. And at what age, the earlier the better. And you each know your child, and something that mother and father should get on the same page and really figure out what's going to work best for their child.
What's the earliest? What's the earliest?
And what role does a Rebbe or Mora have in the class?
To make sure that the parents are doing it. It shouldn't come in the class. Baradim, definitely not. Ramichal Yehuda Lefkowitz on this question instructed us principals that if we could, we should meet with each student individually in a situation where the parent was not doing it. But ideally, it should come from the parent. I can't really tell you. Every child develops at a different age. And, I can tell you as a principal, one of my worst days was when a young girl came into the office crying bitterly because something happened and she had no advance warning of that. Okay? And there's no excuse for it. And while we mention this, we also have to be very, very careful to understand when your children do come up with accusations, when they do tell you statements of inappropriate touch, that you know very carefully that there are unfortunately more situations where there are false accusations than when they are real stories. And it's a very, very delicate balance. I recall one time many, many years ago in a different school where I was a principal. I was sitting in my office innocently doing my work, and 2 6th grade girls came walking into my office. One was crying bitterly, and the other one was there as her spokesperson. What was the problem? We came into class after gym. We had class, and the class was taught by a Rebbe, and she says, I sat down at my desk, and my Rebbe walked over to me and started unbuttoning my blouse. Okay? A story, as a principal, you never want to have to deal with. Okay, I'm not going to give you all the details, but I sat in my room for an hour crying with Sefer Tehillim. I said, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, help me here. I don't believe it's true, and the Rebbe is denying it. I need some clue over here. And Baruch Hashem, a girl comes into the office and says, I know what's going on, but you should know what happened last night. This and this girl called me up last night and said, you wait tomorrow, I'm getting Rabbi so-and-so fired. Okay, so I didn't need to know anymore. So you have to be very careful to know what, and Baruch Hashem, Torah Mesorah has taken some great, great steps in this area. They developed a whole task force and a whole system of how to deal with these issues. But as parents, you have to be very, very careful to make sure that your children know what to do when Chas V'Shalom something like that happens. Let's move into the... Yes? We'll leave... it's a quick one, yes.
I just want to be careful because I took a small course by somebody who taught us specifically on this inyan, and I hesitate to, say something, against the Rav, but she taught us exactly the opposite, and she was inculcating us with us the information that we should believe our children no matter what when they come to us and they do say something, because she said very often that it's not true, that it is true. They're very opposite. So I just, I would just caution maybe, because if I wouldn't have heard this information, then I would more be inclined to think, based on what the Rav just said, that if my child would say that, then I would be more inclined to think it's probably not true, as opposed to the opposite. Okay. So
I'm very, very sensitive to listen to children when they say these things. But the literature tells us that there are more false accusations lately than real ones. Okay, think about the sixth grade girl, and think about any intelligent child who hasn't been indebted against an adult. It's quite easy to deal with.
Maybe then when they're younger, perhaps they don't have the mind to even access this type of even thought.
You have
five
to.
Five or six or seven, there was, as opposed to a sixth grade.
There was a very famous case in California with a daycare center, okay, where many, many people were imprisoned until they found out later on that it was all fabricated by pre-K children, that age. So again, it takes tremendous, tremendous chachma and siyata d'shmaya, and you have to involve the professionals. There is a chachma in knowing what's a real accusation and what isn't. And take your children serious. I'm not saying you shouldn't take them serious, but make sure that you don't go to the end conclusion immediately.
Okay, I would just be nervous to say that I don't believe that, and then they wouldn't come again to tell me because they think I wouldn't believe them.
I would never tell a child I don't believe them.
Okay.
No. Okay, let's move on to W. W is a critical one. Raise your hand if you ever had a need, no, don't. If you ever had a need to call your school to complain about something. Okay? About anything that you don't like. Okay? I've had my share of those calls, and I wish I would have taken a clear, detailed record of them, but there are some that are just classic. Okay. Remember, one of the best ones was from a mother who calls me up, and she goes, several parents have a problem with whatever it was. And I knew that there wasn't another parent in the world who had that same issue. And I said, let me help you out for a moment. I want to help you understand the word several. You are the parent of several children. That doesn't make you several parents. Okay? You're going to say that it's the fault of the school that parents sometimes feel that they need to get together a good enough group of people in order to make their case. Okay? And that's very possible. But I think there are things that we as parents can do to break this cycle, this unhealthy cycle. There has to be a partnership that's developed between the school and the home. It's very, very interesting. If you take a look at the word parent and partners, okay, they're very, very similar. There's one partner that has an extra R, right? The parent and the school, together with the Rabbeinu Shalom, are our partners. Okay, that's the R of parents, that extra R. But we have to make sure that we, as parents, are doing whatever we can to convey the message to the school that we are partners. So let me tell you what I do when I have a problem with a child, and I need the parents' help, and I think parents should just do the same thing in reverse. When I call up a parent to discuss a problem that I'm having with a child, my opening statement is the letter W. What? We. We have a problem. It's not my problem, it's not your problem. We are partners. It's our problem. Help us out. And therefore, when you have to call the school, what should you say? We have a problem. Okay? It's not your problem, it's the school's problem together with yours. And I think if we can start using the W, the we, much more with our schools and the interactions that we have, we would be much better off. Now, if there was a group of teachers in Rabbeim here, I would give them the typical spiel about communicating with parents, how to do that and how to listen to them and so on and so forth. But let me tell you what I'm going to tell parents. I don't know when school begins here in Chicago, but I would strongly encourage you, all of you, to call all of your children's Rabbeim and Moros before school begins. And if school already began, it is not too late. And you open, and it's a 1 minute conversation. Hello, Rabbi Katz, I want to introduce myself. My son is going to be in your class this year. I am thrilled. All summer long he's been talking about this, and so have we. We can't wait until school began. We would have actually paid another $1,000 tuition if school would have begun a week earlier. We are thrilled that you're going to be his Rebbe this year. I want to tell you, this is the best way that you can communicate with me, and you should also know that my son has a tendency of, you know, whatever the case may be. And feel free, this is the way that you can communicate with me. That opening call, again, can do wonders. I have to share this story. It's one of the best ones that I've ever heard and repeated. I don't know if you heard about the story with the coffee and the Rebbe. If you didn't, you'll hear it now. If you did, you'll hear it again. It's a fabulous story. A Rebbe calls up a parent and says, I'm having a very, very difficult time with your child. Your child has ADHD. Okay, extremely hyper. It's all over the place. Parent says, I don't think we're talking about the same child. My child is a gem. Comes home every day, he sits quietly, he plays with his Lego, everything is perfect, I don't know what you're talking about. Rebbe saw he wasn't getting anywhere with his parent, he says goodbye and I'll keep you posted and hopefully things will change. 2 weeks later, the Rebbe calls the parent and the Rebbe says, I want you to know, whatever you did at home has done wonders. Your son is a different boy. He's just a pleasure to have in class. Parent says, actually, I don't think I did anything different, I think you did. He says, what are you talking about? So the parent says, tell me what have you done differently in the past 2 weeks? He goes, oh, I decided to appoint your son as my coffee maker. So every day, I have him go out of the room in the morning, and he prepares my cup of coffee, and I give him a treat for doing that. I give him a candy. I give him the candy, he goes out the room, and he sucks on his candy, and he makes a coffee, and he brings me the coffee, and he's a pleasure. Parent says, you know, that's very interesting. He told me about the coffee making. He told me about the candy too. But he told me the first day he had that candy, it had a very bitter taste. So starting in day two, what he would do is when he would prepare the coffee, he put the candy in the coffee. You know what that candy was? Ritalin or something like it. Okay. Who suddenly got much better? The Rebbe was feeling much, much better. Okay, he was taking his pill, but that's probably didn't happen. But it's a lesson in itself. When you call your school to discuss a problem, make sure to begin the conversation with the word we. Now, I think it would be very, very wrong if we don't at least mention the many lessons, we'll do one of them, that we found in yesterday's parasha about the Ben Sira Meir. So, many, many lessons, as much as it will never happen, and we can say there will never be such a thing, there's no such a thing as a bad kid, we can take that lesson. But the lesson that I want to use in connection with the W is also to make sure that the mother and the father of the child are on the same page. And that's another one of the, another lesson for the W. We make sure that you are on the same page, both mother and father, in relationship to the education of your children. Not only is it not going to help the school when you have the mother calling, I'm having a situation as we speak. I have a mother who's fighting to put her child in the school, and the father is fighting he shouldn't be in the school. And the one I feel bad for is the child. Think about how confusing this is for the child. You want to make sure that on everything in connection with chinuch, you can differ with your spouses and behind closed doors, but your child has to hear a uniform message. You are all on the same page. So the second W is we meaning the mother and the father, should both be on the same page. We finished with the word new. We're ready for the year. Why? Why are we here? Okay. That's not the why. Why is the word your? You have to remember, whose responsibility is it to educate your children? It's obviously the parents' responsibility. You are asking the school to be kind enough and to do your responsibility and your job. And you're going to tell me, well, after all, I am paying for it. So I don't know if your local principals are comfortable letting you know that you're not paying for it. Even if you're paying full tuition, that does not cover the cost of educating your child. Okay? You need a lot of fundraising, a lot of other things to make sure that there are enough funds to educate your children. So even if you are paying the full cost of tuition, you're still asking for a favor. You're still having somebody else doing your work, and you have to appreciate that, and you have to use every opportunity to express your appreciation to your schools. And let me share something with you. None of us professionals are doing what we do because we're waiting to get the thank you from the parent. None of us. I don't know another principal in the world who's doing the job for that reason. But yet, it goes a long way. Use every opportunity you have. Anything that you're happy about, let not only the principal know, but let everybody know. Why is it that when something goes wrong in carpool lane, everybody's talking about that thing that just happened that was a problem in school? But when you're happy about something, when your child went for Feher in ninth grade, and he went to four different yeshivas, and they all want to take him into their yeshiva because he did so well, you make sure to publicize that. Let people know about how happy you are with a job that they are doing. Whose job are they doing? Your job. Make sure that you remember that. There is another word for the why. We can't just keep it so simple as your. And that's going to be yes. Now, does that mean that we tell yes to everything a child wants? No. Our children are being raised with too many yeses. But at the same time, they're being raised with too many no's. Meaning, there is a way to say yes without saying, there's a way to say no without saying no and actually saying yes. And let me give you one of the best examples I can give. And please make sure, don't convey this example to anybody in Minneapolis. Okay? It's a beautiful, well-kept secret for the past 10 years, and I want it to continue. We have a wonderful davening program in our school. Every morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, grades 5 through 8 boys assemble in the room like this, and we have a beautiful davening. Now, what happens during that davening? One of the biggest problems that I observe in many, many schools, what happens during davening? So think about it. If we have 100 students, may a student have to go to the bathroom during davening? Yeah, I mean, after all, we're all human. So think about what's going to happen to the atmosphere in the davening when the door is being opened and closed how many times? An average? Everybody can go once during the davening, right? Okay? So the door is being opened and closed 200 times in the morning. Okay? How can anybody concentrate and focus on davening? And then, let's say 50% of the students have something in their throat, they need a drink. Okay? Another 25% have a running knows. Another 10% have to have their temperature taken. Okay? This is not a joke. Go observe many, many davening programs in yeshivas, and it's this is what you'll find. Okay? So we decided, in our minyan, we don't want anybody leaving. So could you imagine what would happen if I would go the first day and I would say, nobody can go to the bathroom during davening? What can I expect? Okay, 100 urologist letters the next day. Okay? This and this child must be excused. He has a bladder problem. Okay? So I want to make sure I don't want... This is my problem. I don't want anybody leaving during davening, but at the same time, I can't say not to. Okay? So that's where some clever technique works, and again, don't speak to anybody in Minneapolis about this, but it is now, we have now finished 10 years. We're starting our 11th year, Kenanar. Okay? And I can tell you, in the past 10 years, nobody leaves davening during davening. But there's another remarkable thing. I never told anybody that they couldn't. Okay? So we set things up in the beginning. We're not going to go into that detail. But what happened was the first time, a few weeks after into the program, a child said, hold on, I'm getting a little comfortable with this guy against me. I'm going to risk now. I'm going to ask him, can I go to the bathroom? Okay? So he comes up to me during davening and says, can I go to the bathroom? And principal, what do I want to... Do I want him to go? No. But can I say, can I risk saying no? No. Can I risk saying yes? No, I'm stuck. I have a very simple solution. Sure, you can go right after davening. Okay? Psychologically, he did not go home that night and say, what? I was not allowed to go to the restroom. I asked and I wasn't allowed to go. And yet, he didn't go. So what did he hear? When he asked me the question, what was the answer?
Yes.
Yes. But with some condition to it. You'll go after davening. So I was able to say the no, okay, without letting him go. And there are different clever ways of doing it. And therefore, I'd like to summarize and say the why is we have to use many more yeses, but still get the no's accomplished. Okay? That's the trick. A parent called me today. It's interesting, the calls that I already received this year from parents, not in my school, okay, disclaimer, but it's amazing. One parent calls me up and says as follows, my son, this is in the high school, my son told me that one of the rabbeim in his school slapped the kid. How do I deal with that? I'm not going to give you the answer to that, that's a simple one. But the other one was, today a parent calls me up and says, I'm in a tight budget, my child wants to go get new school supplies. She has most of her supplies from last year that were untouched, right? The schools give you a long list of things that they don't really, right? Okay. So my child has a whole case of things that they never even opened. I want to go shopping. What's going to happen now in the store? My child is going to want to buy everything when she really doesn't need it. So what do you do? You don't want to say no. So you prepare for it. You tell the child beforehand, we're going shopping now, and you're going to have a choice in the store. You can select any two new items that you want. Okay? So technically, are you saying no to the long list that your child is going to want? Yes. But they're not hearing the word no. And don't worry. Many parents will come back to this and say, it's not healthy. Children have to hear the words. Have to hear the word no. Don't worry about them hearing the word no. If they're not going to get what they need, they ultimately understand that that's no, but they're not hearing that word. It's okay. Let's move on to the E. Right? What is E? We got to educate them on the...
What?
That was the first one. I just wanted to see if you remembered. Okay. Just the other E. Okay. There are many, many, many critical midas that we have to teach our children, educate our children. But I want to focus specifically on one that for some reason I believe, if I had to choose one, this is the one I would focus on this year. To make sure that our children understand and practice emes, honesty. And it's such a broad mida, and I'm going to share one of my best stories about this because it really illustrates what we can do as parents to help our children develop this midah of emes. This is a story 94. It's probably one of the best that ever happened to me. You ready? If you fell asleep, you should be woken up now. Okay? This story happened. I was a principal in a different city. One Monday morning, the phone rings. Parent calls me up. First name is Wendy. And Wendy tells me, "Rabbi, this past weekend I worked over this and this family, and they're sending their children to your school. It was a great, great success. This is a family who we desperately were trying to recruit to come to our school, a non-firm family. It was a major celebration." I say, "Wendy, good job. I owe you big time. How can I pay you back?" So she goes, "Oh, that's easy. Everybody says that you make a wicked chont. Why don't you invite my family and I for Shabbos lunch?" I said, "It's a deal. When do you want to come?" She goes, "This Shabbos." "Beautiful, invited, no problem." Wendy and her four children are coming for Shabbos lunch. We get off the phone. Another call comes in. So I forget to make the call home to inform my wife that I just invited Wendy and her family. I forgot about it. Wednesday morning, a new family is moving into town. Who's this family? Rebbe and his wife, Amora, and their children were moving into town. They were now going to become Rebbe and Amora in our school. They were moving from a different city, and their moving truck is at their home, and I'm there because we're bringing them into town, so I'm involved with their relocation. And the truck is unloading, and my phone rings. It's my wife. She says, "We have a terrible emergency in the family. I have to go travel to Cincinnati to take care of something. Somebody in the family is not well. And I'm not sure, I'll probably not be back for Shabbos." So this couple overhears the conversation. They say, "Great, you'll come to us for Shabbos lunch." So I say, "Come on, you're just moving into town. You didn't even..." He says, "No, that's going to force us to unpack quicker. Please come to us for Shabbos." I had totally forgotten what happened with Wendy. And I accepted their invitation. Friday, the regular work day for me, it's the summer, but I'm still in school. Friday afternoon, I come home from school. At my doorstep is a beautiful bouquet of flowers. And for some reason, no card to it. See, who in the world is sending me flowers? My wife knows that I'm not a big believer, and at the most, I'll stop off at the cemetery on the way home from work and pick up something. But I'm not going to go spend money on flowers. Who is sending me flowers? I go into the house, and I'm really, really wondering who's sending me flowers. I'm getting ready for Shabbos. 5 minutes before this man, I listen to my voicemail messages at home. "Hi, Rabbi, this is Wendy. I hope you took the flowers in." See, why in the world is Wendy sending me flowers? Now, I know I have to get some educational testing over here, but it just wasn't connecting. I totally forgot about my conversation with Wendy that I had on Monday morning. I go to shul Friday night, beautiful davening after davening. By the way, train your children to make sure to go over to their rabbeim and principals after davening on Shabbos and wish them good Shabbos. Very, very important thing to do. If just for that message it was kedai to give you the whole Wendy story. So Wendy's son, Eitan, comes over to me. "Shabbat Shalom. Shabbat Shalom, Eitan, how's life?" He goes, "Oh, we are so excited about tomorrow lunch." Oy vey. Suddenly it hit me. I'm stuck. I don't know what I'm gonna do. I run home quickly, I look in the pantry, there's not even a jar of ketem gefilte fish. Forget the chont, I mean, but there's nothing doing. So what do? I'm a smart young man. I go to the house of this Rebbe. Okay? I knock on the door. They both come to the door because they're new in town, they're not expecting anybody. They come. They both say the same thing right away. "You're coming to us tomorrow, right?" Meaning they thought maybe I... So I said, "Yes." He says, "You came to wish us good Shabbos." I say, "No, traditionally, when I go to somebody's house, the night before I come and I check out the menu and what's going on." Now, if you were him or her, you would have regretted your move immediately. They look at each other and they say, "Come on in. What would you like to know?" I said, what are you serving tomorrow?" "We have challah, fish, liver." They go through the whole menu. I say, "You have enough." I said, "What do you mean enough?" I say, "Well, look at me. I'm rather, I have a big appetite. So he says, yeah, I see we usually make plentiful. Finally, I told him what was happening. I told him the story about Wendy. I said, sure, bring her over. Now, what do you think I was busy doing all night? Huh? How is, what excuse am I giving Wendy? Okay, the crock pot wasn't plugged in. I mean, every imaginable excuse. Okay, until Shabbos morning, Wendy, I see you coming up to shul. What do? I go over to her and I tell her what? Wendy, I'm terribly sorry. Something happened the moment after we spoke Monday until last night. I had total, I can't tell you why, I totally forgot about our conversation, and therefore, you're not eating by me today. We're going to the, okay, and says, Rabbi, no problem, as long as we get a rain check. I do want your child one day. And that's what happened. What is the lesson over here? Okay, take these stories, and we have thousands of them, okay, and educate your children that there's no reason to say anything but the simple truth. Okay, don't punish them when they're saying the truth. Let them know that they're going to get a tremendous reward for being honest. Emes. You want to have a relationship with your child that you know that anything that he or she says is going to be 100% true. You know, one of the mistakes that we make in general is we want to teach our children all these important lessons, and we use stories that happened to our gedolim of the past. And I think there's a tremendous benefit in using current day stories. Things happen to you every single day in your life that you can expose your children to these stories. For some reason, it has a much, much stronger effect in changing a behavior than a story that you'll tell them that happened with the gadol 100 years ago. When you tell them about something 100 years ago, the immediate reaction is what? That was in those days. That was with those times. I'll give you a simple example. Something that I recently realized, children have a very, very difficult time, as adults do, is putting things in perspective. Okay? It's a tremendous, I don't know if I'm going to call it a skill, okay? But there's something to it, the ability to put something in perspective. And we expect our children to do it, and yet we don't give them any tools to do it. I had a remarkable story 2 weeks ago. I went to visit with somebody in the hospital, somebody who was in an intensive care unit. I walk into the hospital, and the cubicles in the intensive care unit were by numbers. And this patient was in cubicle number 17. Opposite, directly facing cubicle 17, was cubicle 18. And I immediately thought, and somebody else actually said it, oy, isn't it a shame that she's not in what? 18, representing Chai. Wouldn't it have been such a great... Okay. And throughout the entire Shabbos, we were the whole Shabbos, several times that was mentioned. She was having a very difficult Shabbos. Until Sunday morning. Sunday morning at 8 o'clock in the morning, right, we hear on the speaker, code, blue, cubicle 18. All the doctors run to cubicle 18, and within 15 minutes, they announce the patient is dead. Suddenly, were we happy that the patient wasn't an 18? Suddenly, 18 was not the number we wanted. We wanted 17. 17 is gematria tov. It was good. It was a much better number than the 18. Now, you have such a story. It's an incredible story of what? Of putting things in perspective. Tell it to your children. Expose them to it at their level and bring out the lessons. There are so many lessons that we have that we should be able to show our children and teach them these lessons so that they can gain a good perspective in life. Make sure to do as much as possible. If you are tempted at work with a situation of not being emistic, okay, make sure to tell your children. I recently had somebody who came, I'm not going to say the story, but offered me to do something that was not 100% kosher. And I'm sharing that story with as many people as possible to teach them, why do we only have to hear the stories about people who took money in a non-kosher way? We have to show our children that emes is a quality that they have to strive for and live by. The A. I think we're up to A, right? Okay. The A is probably the most difficult to do, because it's something that we have to do every single day in our homes. And this story, this lesson, came to me as a result of an experience that I had last year in Los Angeles. I was visiting Los Angeles one day, and I went into a restaurant. I'm not going to tell you the name of the restaurant, because maybe I'm hoping that the next time I go there, I'll get a free meal or something, so I'm not going to tell you the name. But I walked into the restaurant, the owner came over to me, not the maitre d', not the waiter, the owner came over to me, he sat me down at a table, and he introduced himself, and he said, "I want you to know that I'm the owner of this restaurant, I'm going to be here, you're going to be served by a wonderful waiter, and there's also a maitre d', but if there's anything that I can do to help you, please come to me." And throughout the meal, he came by several times. I felt like I was the only customer in that store. It was an amazing feeling. And as I was sitting there, I was writing this article in my mind. And the article was called Ambiance. Okay. What he created is he created a certain ambiance. It wasn't the fancy napkins or anything of that. He created what I felt was an ambiance, meaning I would always want to come back to that restaurant. Okay, why? He made me feel like he wanted me there. And now I relate that to the home. What happens in many homes, none of ours, okay, but I've seen it in too many homes that we have to mention it. When children come home from school, are they getting the message that you couldn't wait for them all day? You've been sitting by the door waiting, when is my precious Yankala coming home? When is Chani going to burst through the door with her backpack? What feeling are they getting? Okay, are you on the phone? Are you getting off the phone? I'm going to share something very, very personal. Okay, when I walk into the house, my wife, who, regardless who she's talking to, says, "My husband just walked in, I got to go." Okay. I'm not going to make her go. She wants to stand there and she wants to greet me as I would do for her. And that's what we should be doing for all of our children. And the question is, what is the ambiance? What is the atmosphere? Use whatever word you find better. What are we creating for our children when they come home? Are they getting the feeling that you want them there, or chas v'shalom, the opposite? Everything else happening all night long, what is the feeling that they're getting? If you are worried, if you are upset at the school calendar because you had too many days that the school is taking off to have in-service for the Rabbeim, to make them better, and you're very upset about that, and you want to voice your upsetness to the school, make sure not to do it in front of who? In front of the kids. The kids should hear, "Well, I'm thrilled that there's no school. I'm going to take off work so I can spend the day with you." There's nothing more that I would like than doing that. That the question we have to ask ourselves every single day, what is the ambiance, what is the atmosphere that we are creating for our children in our own homes? Because if they don't find it in our homes, chas v'shalom, they're going to look for it elsewhere. Okay. We are up to the... R. Okay. Now I'm going to cheat. Okay. But because I'm cheating, I'm giving you a gift. The R, the real R, stands for real important. Okay? But that's a cheat. I didn't tell you what's real important yet. Okay? I think everything I said is real important, but this is going to be really, really important. Okay? But I'll tell you the gift I'm going to give you. I'm going to give you a tool that you're not going to understand it, you're not going to believe it, and you're not going to appreciate it until you use it. But it's a tool that works 100% of the time to everybody, children and adults. And it's a tool to get people to change your behavior. You ready for it? Okay. I expect each and every one of you who will try this, whether you're going to try it on your bosses, on your spouses, or your children, you're going to see it's going to work if you do it correctly, and you're going to send me a postcard and you're going to say thank you. Okay. And I'll tell you what it's called. It's something that's very difficult to understand, again, until you practice it, but it works. It's called the reinforcement theory. Okay? And this is the way it works. And let me give you the example that will be easiest to understand. It was what happened when we introduced the reinforcement theory to our Rabbeim. It was not clicking. They didn't get it. And they finally decided, let's use an example of a student in school. Show us how it works. So we decided, we had a student who went, what time does davening begin by us?
8 o'clock.
You were listening well. He would come anywhere between 8:15 and 8:45. He didn't go to the bathroom in between davening, but he didn't walk in until then. Okay? And what did we do? Finally, I told the rabbin, watch what's going to happen now to this young boy. Okay, let's give him a name, David. Okay? David walks in the next day at 8:25. After davening, I call David over, and I tell him, David, you lost your recess this morning. You cannot go to recess because you came late for davening. The rabbeim are ready to attack me because we have a policy in our school that what? You can't take away a child's recess. Okay? Rav Shmuel Kamenetsky says taking away a child's recess is corporal punishment. Okay? So the rabbeim attack me. I say, hold on a second. We're using this now as a lab. We're going to show you how reinforcement theory works. Says, okay, we're going to watch. In the meantime, David loses his recess. What time does he come the next day? 8:30. Why? Reinforcement theory tells you as follows. Any behavior you want to continue, you reinforce. Meaning, what is reinforcement? You pay attention to it. Did we pay attention to his coming late? How? By punishing him. That means, if I would have called him in that first day when he came late, and I would have told him, you came late today, here's $10. Okay? That also would have been what? Reinforcement. We don't care what the reinforcement is. As long as the behavior is being reinforced, what can you expect? It will repeat itself. So the next day, after he comes in at 8:30, Rabbeim, together we watch, I call him over, I say, bingo! Morning recess and lunch recess. Okay, and now they understand this is part of the experiment we're using. And I know it's going to work, so I'm willing to take the chance. The next day, when does he come? Odapam, he's coming late. Okay. In the meantime, how's he feeling? Is the school a happy place for him?
No.
How are his parents feeling? Horrible. Everybody's suddenly hating me. Okay, but it's a worthwhile investment because it's going to teach a very, very important skill. He continuously comes late. I invite his parents in for a meeting to discuss it. Everything we do, nothing works. And the rabbeim say, come on, Nusa, what's happening? So I say, you see what's happening? We are reinforcing his... So he says, okay, so don't reinforce it anymore. So I said, okay, we're going to stop reinforcing it. That means from now on, when he comes late, what do? We make believe we don't see it. One second. Is that suddenly making him come on time? Why? With what's not happening, there's no reinforcement. Why is there no reinforcement? Because he's not coming on time. Right? So far we're not going to reinforce what? He's coming late, but there's no coming on time to reinforce. So we're waiting. Every single day when he walks in, all the rabbeim's eyes come on me, and I look down as if I don't see him. And we're waiting and waiting and waiting. A month and a half goes by, and finally what happens one day? I walk into the Beis HaKnesses at 5 to 8, and David is here. Both his parents had to go out of town. There was no choice. They had to drop him off early. Okay, he's here. The rabbeim walk in. They see him. And now, what are we doing? What should I do to him? What do I have to do? If I reinforce, what's going to happen? So Rabbeim come over to me right after davening. What are we doing? So I said, I think probably a 10-speed bike would be in order. So he says, is that what we're going to do? Don't you think it's going to be a problem now? All the kids are going to find out that that's what you don't come for davening from time for a while, and then you suddenly come. So I said, I'm joking. Take it easy. What are you going to do? So I said, wait, I'll let you know at the end of the day. All day long I'm thinking, what is going to be my should I just give him an extra recess? That's not going to do it either. Okay. Finally, that night, late at night, I reminded myself I did not do anything for David. I call him up. First of all, you get a call from a principal, right? If it's for something good, you're a happy camper. I called him up. I said, David, tell me, what's my job? He goes, best I know, you're a principal. I said, what does a principal do? He says, you put out fires, and you take care of problems, and you help people, all the wonderful things. And I say, today was a very, very difficult day for me. A lot of challenges. And I want to tell you why I had an easy time surviving today. It's because of something that somebody did this morning at 5 to 8. Would you like to guess what? He goes, was it my being on time for davening? He says, you bet. And I'm just calling to say thank you for making my job easy today. He said, thank you for the call. I didn't have to give him a bicycle. I didn't even have to give him a dollar. All I had to do is? I reinforced that behavior. Now, according to the reinforcement theory, think about this. This is where the logic doesn't work, and I'm going to confuse you, just to reinforce the point. If I would have called him up that night and would have said, David, because you came on time today, and you showed what? That you're capable of coming on time, you're losing recess tomorrow, for all the other times you... Okay? What would that have done? It would have also... reinforced. Reinforcement is, regardless what the reinforcement is, as long as you're paying attention, you're focusing on that behavior, you can expect it to continue. What happened the next morning? Hold on, you know what happened first of all? At 10 to 8, who was in the room? Who was in the room? The Rabbeim. They were all in the room. An amazing thing. Why? They wanted to see. And you know what? David was already there when they walked in. It's an amazing thing. This story happened in March of his 7th grade. He continued that year and the following years through 8th grade. You know what? He never came late. Never. How often did I reinforce that behavior? After that second day when he came at 10 to 8, what happened? I walked in, I saw him. I reinforced it. You know what the reinforcement was? Simple thumbs up. Very, very important thing. Do not think that you have to give your children great rewards. There was a tremendous study that was done. They took 6,000 people for this study. I believe that there were no Jews involved in it. Because they asked themselves the question, what is it that motivates people to continued success? And they came up with a list of 10 items. You know what was the lowest motivator? Is what they called edibles, food. That's why I don't think there were any Jews involved. Okay? You want to have a big minion for your davening? Give a good kiddush. Forget what was the lowest motivator. You know what the highest motivator was? What they called knowledge of results. When you let somebody know how they did, okay, that sums up with a message to him. What? You did right, okay. And the next day when he came on time, what did he get? Nothing. You have to wean him off. And after a full month of coming on time, I went into his class one day to the 7th grade with a beautiful decorated cake. We're making a party. Okay, David hasn't missed coming on time late. And that was the end of it. We never brought it up again. Yeah, I mean, occasionally he'll come to me now. I think he's in 12th grade. He'll come to me and say, are you still sharing my story with your reinforcement theory? Yes, I am. And I'll always share it because it's a great one and it teaches us. So therefore, according to this theory, you are home one day, your children come home and you give them the proper welcome, and then they're playing with their toys. And suddenly you hear one of your children say a name to another child, and a name that they don't hear, they didn't learn in your house. They picked it up outside in the streets. It's not appropriate. The reinforcement theory tells you what? You can't say anything about it. Whether you're going to say something about it, what's going to happen? You're reinforcing it. So what do? You wait. It's not going to take too long. Is he continuously say that? No. And a half hour later, he's still playing nicely. You go over to him and you say, it's beautiful. I've been sitting here now for the past half hour, and I hear beautiful Torah words coming from you. You're using right the nice words. It's really a pleasure. Now what are you reinforcing? The nice words. You didn't have to say anything about the inappropriate words. Later on, a week later, you can give him a whole lesson on appropriate and inappropriate words, but not in connection to what they did. When they did it, it is not going to work. And that is a reinforcement theory. That is a treat that I just gave you. But what is the real important thing? Okay? And we're going to conclude with this. The real important thing And I've been saying this to parents now for the past couple of years, and I believe that this is the greatest cause for our children at risk problem and for many of our other problems. Okay? And I'll introduce this as follows. There are two questions I strongly encourage that your children be asked. And I have asked thousands of children these two questions. My first question I ask them is, does your mother, and then we go to the father, does your mother love you? Let me share some horrible results. Okay? 84% of our children, meaning when I say our children, I'm talking about Jewish children. Okay? 84%, what do you think say? Either no or I don't know. Okay? I believe that close, very, very close to 100% of our parents love their children. Okay? But there's a problem over here. There is a disconnect between the way the parent is feeling and the way the... Let's take a step further. I go to the 16% who said what? No, 16% said yes. I have the second question to them. My second question is, how do you know? And what do you think the answers are? Huh? They buy me stuff. Anybody want to experiment with your child now? I'll call up and I have no. I'm serious. Okay, you'd be amazed at what the answers that are going to be. If you're lucky, if you have the 16%, you'll be amazed at what they're going to say to the second question. Okay, the best story is where a parent once ran home after this message and accidentally woke up their daughter, okay? And the father walks into the room. He didn't want to, couldn't wait until the morning. He didn't want to ask, does Tati love you? So he was brave enough to say, does Mommy love you? So the girl says, yes. He was ready to make a kiddush, right? Everything is going great. So he goes to question number two. How do you know that Mommy loves you? He says, because Mommy prepares my clothes first every morning. Okay, so he tells his wife, why do you prepare Miriam's clothes first? It's because it takes her the longest to get ready. Okay, so what does that mean? The first time that she's not going to get her clothes prepared first, what is she going to say? Mommy doesn't love me anymore. So the love can't be dependent on anything other than what Rabbi Huff said it before. How do you know? Because they told me. Okay, and how often should we tell our children we love them? Okay, so this is the real important thing. Every single day. Okay, if you ask any one of my children, when was the last time I told them I love you? They'll tell you today. Okay, it's not a good, now, you have to really mean it. I mean, we're not just, the best story is I once had somebody with a heavy accent from a different country say, at what age does this apply to? Does it apply to teenagers as well? I said, you bet. I still love my mother to tell me. I call my mother every single morning. I don't miss a morning. And she tells me, I love you. So this lady says, if I tell my teenager I love you, he tells me you're full of anything. So I say, then you probably are. If it's not sincere, it's going to come across. Okay? None of my children ever told me that they don't think I love them. Okay? Yeah, obviously, you have to say it with sincerity. You have to really believe it. But when we hear these numbers, okay, and it's scary, and if you're brave enough, try it on your own children. Okay? 84% did not say yes. Okay? And it's because I believe, because we have, it's not because we don't love them. It's because we haven't told them clearly, I love you. And that is real, real important. I believe that after everything is said and done, the ultimate thing that we need to have a successful year with our children is tefillah, every single day. As much as it's important to tell our children that we love them, we have to tell HaKadosh Baruch Hu we love him, and because he loves us, he's going to give us a tremendous amount of nachas from our children. Thank you for being a great audience. We'll just review real briefly the N is... never embarrass. The E is educate them about the facts of life. The W is the we, the relationship between the school and the relationship between the parents. The Y, it is your job. The E, it is Emes, and other middos too, but Emes is important. The A is create the ambiance, the atmosphere. And the R, use positive reinforcement and do what's real important. Tell them, I love you all. Yes. Go into any emergency room in the country, okay, you'll see evidence of parents who don't either love their children or they don't know how to deal with their children. It's unfortunate. Yes?
Well, talking about loving your children, I mean, I've one of my sons is in yeshiva, and that love is tied to achievement. Because I did great in school, you know, like, don't you love me? I didn't say don't you love me, but that was the kind of thing. And I see, like, I just hear mothers talking about my sons, and this year my son's back, this very and I feel like they don't love them, but they love a representation, or they love what they do, but not who they are.
And we have to break that. And the way I believe that we can easily break that, first of all, is for no reason, send your child a fax to yeshiva. Sometimes it's hard to get through. Okay, send them a fax. Okay, simply with the words, "Mommy wants to remind you that she loves you." Okay, he's not going to be embarrassed. Okay, he's not going to, trust me.
Maybe I'll write him a card.
You'll try it. You'll be amazed. You'll tell your friends, I was shocked. I thought he was going to call me up and scream at me, but he actually called me up and said thank you. But there's another important thing. You can't, just like when you're criticizing something the child did, okay, you're not going to criticize the child, you're going to criticize what they did. But even a step further, you're not going to reflect it on the child, you reflect it on yourself. Okay, I'm feeling bad when I wasn't listened to. Okay, it takes it away from the child. Same thing over here with the positive. I'm feeling great because of the grade you received. I believe if we do a lot more reflection the way I feel versus you are a great kid because of the grade, we're going to remove that problem. And again, I think we have to tell our children I love you for no reason other than we love them. And let's not be worried about being touchy-feely. How many times in the Torah did Hashem tell us that He loves us? If Hashem can tell us, and we're supposed to emulate Him as a parent, let's tell our children. Yes?
Your whole main thing when you're going through the new year, but before you broadcast. So we have to do our homework and work on us, making sure we have created a proper environment in our family, at home. But in school, just back to your perspective, that school should be an enjoyable place for our children. And if it's not, what do we do? Our kids, you know, school is coming now and it's not an enjoyable place. As parents, what are we supposed to do?
You have a lot of things to do. Okay, you have to approach your schools and impress upon them to do it. I believe if you do it with the we approach, you'll be much, much better off. Okay, approach your school and say, what can we as a parent do to help you make the school a happy place for children? I don't know too many principals who will argue on the premise with the premise that school should be a happy place. The question is, some of them just don't know how to do it. Okay? And I think we have to offer our assistance. What can we do as parents? Create a dialogue with the school. Do you know how many rabbeim across the country and moros today, at this hour in the night, are working tirelessly decorating their rooms and trying to make sure that there's a good ambiance the first day? I think there's a lot more positive that we don't recognize. I think a lot is going on, and we have to help our schools achieve that happy place for children. It should be a happy place. I would strongly encourage a school, if I were talking to a group of principals now, if I would have a policy, if a child doesn't want to come to school that day, he shouldn't come. If you don't want to be here, don't come. That's how positive the school should be.
Is there a difference? I noticed, like, in high school, my kids are in high school, they love it. I mean, they went through, my daughter graduated in high school, it was a wonderful experience. Elementary, I don't know if it's a maturation, I don't know whatever is going on with the structure, it's not the same. And the whole, I mean, I thought it was Mike, but the whole, I mean, majority of my friends and things like that.
I can talk from my experience. I obviously loved school as a child. If not, it would have been very foolish for me to be back in a building that I didn't like. Right? I'm working in the schools. I must have had a good experience in school. I think school is a happy place. I walk into my school, it really is enjoyable, and I think it could happen. It's not an overnight thing, but it could come and visit. Okay? Ask anything. It doesn't have to be on New Year. It can be on the old year, too.
Would we be able to get a copy of the newsletter? Is that something
that
we can ask?
I can get it to every half of you. Yeah, yeah. If you, email works best.
Oh, email?
Email is best. Chaim Tov 10. Chaim. Tov. Want a good life? The number 10 at AOL. And the phone number is 612-281-4162. Again, Rabbi Hauff, thank you very much for inviting me. Hatzlacha Rabbah, have a great year.
Yasher Koyach, Rabbi Ginsburg, for a wonderful presentation. Just quickly, first of all, for the gentleman, if you'd like to make a minion for Marv, I think we should be able to have a minion. In addition, there are many materials that you passed on your way in, and maybe you didn't have a chance to take a look at them because you were in a rush to get inside. Many of them are available at no charge. The CDs are available for $5. There are also refreshments on the table over here. Please help yourselves. Thank you so much, everyone, for coming, and we look forward to future programming on behalf of Priority One. Thank you very much.
Thank you for listening to this presentation brought to you by Priority One. Please visit us online at www.priority-one.org. That's priority-1.org, where you can download free audio and publications on parenting, teaching, and teens at risk. For more information or to make a donation, please visit us online or call 800-33-4EVER.